Dream is a series of thoughts and images occurring in a person's mind. Another definition is dream is a cherished aspiration, an ambition, or ideal. One of our greatest gifts that God has given you is the gift of imagination. It's the ability to see things in your mind, to think and to create with mental images in your mind. Now everyone, I want you to close your eyes and imagine the front page of the news stating, Croatia disqualified from the World Cup. Picture in your mind that we are at the finals and we'll be playing the World Cup tonight. And dream that we'll won that World Cup as well. Now open your eyes. From what I see, that I can see everyone there, you're just smiling. And so much joy, and this is just from your imagination. Athletes need to imagine themselves winning and believing that it will happen. Architects need to have vision for the buildings and to be stable, to sturdy for the people in it. Nothing becomes reality unless you use your imagination. And that leads to faith. It's because they do not believe that it might happen, that's hope, but they believe that it will happen, and that's faith. And then what is faith? Faith is confidence in what we hope for and certain about what we do not see. Faith is believing in what God can do for you, especially when you cannot see it. But first of all, we need to know what faith is not. Faith is not bargaining with God, saying, God, if you do this, I will do this. If God, you do that, I will do that. It's not bargaining with God. Faith is not a feeling, because feeling usually tends to get in the way of faith. When we feel a certain way, we tend to rely on our feelings instead of faith. A dream requires imagination and faith. Oh yeah, that's the image for the next one. In Ephesians 3, from 16 to 20, it reads, I pray that out of his glorious riches, he may strengthen you with power through his spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. And I pray that being rooted and established in love may have power together with all saints and grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ. And to know this love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we can ask or imagine, according to his power that is work within us. To him be glory in the church and in Christ Jesus through all generation, forever and ever. Amen.
You know, when I was putting this sermon together, and Mac and I were kind of going over things and thinking about, you know, dreams and faithful aspirations and the ways that people have been inspired in the Bible, one of the most notable things that came to us was the book of Genesis. Genesis, we saw so many things happen through the Hebrews and their ancestors. We saw things through Abraham. We saw things through Isaac. We saw trust and faith and how they had to rely on God in order to achieve those dreams he promised them. But now we're going to move slightly further down the line and look at Joseph. Now, when we think of Genesis and why it was written and who it's addressing, we think of the Hebrews. This would have been able to inspire them and show them in the current time how God has worked in the past for their ancestors. It would have inspired them and moved them to do great things. If we start reading in Genesis 37, we'll start at verse 1. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. This is the account of Jacob. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And he brought their father a bad report about them. Now let's stop there in verse 2. Immediately we see in the first sentence in which Joseph's name is mentioned, he brings a bad report about his brothers. Now, we don't know necessarily whether this report was true, whether it was false. We don't know. But what we do know is that he brought a bad report. And there are a lot of colloquial terms that I could use for this guy, you know, a snake, a snitch. But we'll go with snitch for kind of a universal, everyone understands that word. Now, no one likes a snitch. I've got to apologize for my sister. I'm going to put her on blast. Alright. You know, me and my sister, we grew up. Wait, hurry up. Me and my sister, we grew up, and, you know, as siblings do, there was competition at times, you know. Sometimes you want to one-up each other. And I'll be very fair, like, I snitched as well. Like, I did a lot of that. And, however, you got to think about the heart behind why Joseph was telling on his brothers. You know, why was he being a snitch? Was he doing it for their well-being? Was he doing it so that he could discuss with them whether, you know, how could that be done better? Not really. He goes behind their back, you know, puts himself in kind of the position of authority and oversees them and say, you know, they were doing this, Dad, what can I say? And in my heart, I know that at times when I would have told my sister, it wasn't so that my sister could repent or correct herself or do better next time. I was just like, you know what? Brownie points for me, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is what I get. And the reality of it is we shouldn't get confused with being honest. We shouldn't get confused with him being loving, when in reality, he looked at his 11 older brothers, and in his arrogance, he believed that I have the right to oversee them. I have the right to tell them, you know, I have the right to report. There was a lack of love, but there was also a bit of pride in that as well. We carry on reading in verse 3. Now, verse 3, it says, "Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons." Not great. "Because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, 'Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of corn out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered round mine and bowed down to it.'" We'll pause there. Now, for everyone who has siblings in the audience, you would know that it would not be your best course of action to wake up first thing in the morning, address them while you are all tired, and say, "You know what, one day, you're going to be bowing down to me. One day, you will be at my feet groveling." And I know if I told that to my sister, the response would not be great. I do not blame her. But we got to think about Joseph and why he shared this dream. God shared this dream with him. However, God gave him no instruction to share that dream with his brothers. God gave him no instruction to go out there and boast about how one day you will bow down to me. In fact, picturing this, the verse later says that he gathered his entire family. He even had his mum and father there. Imagine me, a Niger boy, if I said that to my mother. It's all over. So, we got to think about his level of maturity here. First verse says that he was 17 years old. Young man, fairly immature, you know, he's stating these things, not the best. He's arrogant. He believes that he's better than others. He believes that he has that pedestal on which he stands on. There's no reliance on God. There's no even, did I interpret that right? Was that my own dream? No, I'm the best. I'm going to let everyone know. Later we read about how he's spoiled as well. I won't address it in the passage for the sake of time. But it shows that Jacob can sometimes be exempt from the workload that his brothers do. Later his brothers are out in the field tending the sheep or tending the fields. And he's at home with his father. So, you know, his father loves him. There's favoritism, but for that reason, he has helped Joseph to stay stuck in that sin. Stuck in that sin of arrogance and that sin of pride, you know. I'm exempt from what is going on around me. You see, in 1 Peter 2, 18 to 21, you don't have to turn there, it says, "Slaves, In reverent fear of God, submit yourselves to your masters, not only to those who are good and considerate, but also to those who are harsh. For it is commendable if someone bears under the pain of unjust suffering because they are conscious of God. But how is it to your credit if you receive a beating for doing wrong and endure it? But if you suffer for doing good and you endure it, this is commendable before God. To this you were called, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow his steps. Now, Joseph meets two kinds of suffering throughout his journey, which Mac and I will show to you. He suffers because of his sin. Maybe it's not fair, you know, being sold into slavery by your brothers because you're a bit cocky isn't exactly fair. However, God later uses it to mold his character and show him something. You see, God cannot use the proud. God cannot use those who are arrogant. God cannot use those who already see themselves at the top, because God cannot be at the top and guide you. I actually share about myself. You know, recently I've had to humble myself greatly, because by nature I have a prideful pattern of when things aren't going well, whether that be academically, relationships, all sorts of things, I like to withdraw myself. I withdraw myself from people around me, withdraw myself from friends, withdraw myself from family. And I get quite burdened, because I have quite a guilty conscience by nature. I get quite burdened and guilty about maybe where I'm not performing. And whilst at the same time I'm going through all this, I don't actually share it with anyone, but I still want to appear like everything's going fine. I like to show up and help out with the teens. I like to, you know, sign up for teen camp. I like to be like, oh yeah, I can lead the sermon, and I'm ready for that. You know, I like to say I'm in this place where I can do all these things, when in reality, what it is, it's just people pleasing and making sure that my image stays perfect, my image stays clear. And I've really had to have a few discussions about that. I've had to talk to certain people about that. You know, I spoke with my mum even yesterday, and you know, we really had to address, you know, why is it about self when it should be about God's plans and God's dreams? You know, if you let yourself get in the way of God's plans and dreams for you, that would really be a shame. And I think I'd urge you that wherever you're at, ask the people around you, do you see pride in my character? First question. But secondly, more important, would you describe me as humble? Because people can be nice and they can say, you know, you're not that prideful, but are you humble? That's different. Ask people around you and you'll see.
And let's continue in Genesis 39. We'll be reading from verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guards, brought him from the Ishmaelites who had been taken him there. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered. And he lived in the house of his Egyptian's master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. So at this point, Joseph was already sold into slavery, working for Potiphar. And Potiphar see how God is always with Joseph, and seeing how he keeps blessing him with everything he does. So Potiphar let him be in charge of everything his own. But everything seems going quite smoothly, but let's continue and read what's about to happen. So in verse 11, it reads, one day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, come to bed with me. But he said, but he left his cloak in her hands and ran out of the house. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hands and ran out of the house, she called her household servant. Look, she said to them, this Hebrew had been brought to us to make sport of us. He came here to sleep with me, but I screamed and we skipped down to 19. When his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me." He burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. So what happened here was Potiphar's wife found Joseph extremely good-looking, extremely handsome, just like me. I mean, she asked him a few times to sleep with her, but he refuses. And because of that, she accused him of something he never did. And this leads him for being put into prison. Joseph was treated really unjustly. I remember a time when I arrived in England in July 2013. English was not my first language, so I need to adapt to my surroundings. I need to try to understand and communicate with the people around me. I started school in year 9 here. And we never have an official DT teacher in our class. After 3 different teachers, a new teacher joined. Because the student in my class knew that he was new and I couldn't express or speak English quite well, and they blamed me for endangering another student during one of the lessons. And the teacher was really angry with me and put me into detention, and I couldn't even defend myself. I was falsely accused treated really unfairly. Have you ever been treated unfairly? Our reaction usually will be complaining with anger and build up hate. But in Joseph's case, even though he was treated unjustly, but God was with him. In verse 21, and we continue to read, "But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in his eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. And the warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did."
So at this point, Joseph has been sold into slavery by his brothers. He's been wrongly accused and put in jail. And he's sitting there. And he has no clue as to when he might go, when he might leave, when he might be free. You know, we have the blessing of being able to see the recap of his entire life. And we know, you know, he gets out in another couple of years. However, if we read in chapter 40, verse 13 to 14, we can take a look at Joseph. It says, "Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your position, and you'll put Pharaoh's cup in his hand, just as you used to do when you were his cupbearer. But when all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison." Now, what's going on here is Joseph's actually in prison with 2 other men. One is a cupbearer and one was a baker, both for the Pharaoh. They've both been thrown in prison because the Bible doesn't say, you know. But here Joseph is interpreting their dreams, and he's letting them know the cupbearer, that when you go to Pharaoh, mention me. Mention me so that I may be allowed to leave, so that he can find redeeming qualities in myself, so that I can be free. Imagine the despair that Joseph would have had at this moment. He has not done anything wrong. And I think within my own character, I don't like being unfairly or unjustly accused. In fact, when I am, I fight for it. Obviously, BC, I'm trying to keep it BC, but nowadays, as in before Christ, by the way, if you didn't know, it's fine. But my own pride and my own self-esteem would be like, you know, how dare you accuse me? How dare you accuse me of this thing? But Joseph doesn't do that. However, despite Joseph's seemingly harmless plea, God still finds ways to redeem and to mold his character furthermore. If we read in chapter 40, but verse 23, it says, "Now the chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. When 2 full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream." Now, we will read on later, but Joseph will be going up to explain Pharaoh's dream. But this is 2 years. 2 years has passed since Joseph pleaded, you know, "Can I get out of here?" And I don't know about you, but in my relationship with God, or sometimes when I'm praying, or I'm in a sticky situation, or some sort of challenge, and I can't seem to find a way out, if God doesn't respond to me, or I don't feel that God has responded to me, in the way I like, I tend to get very down, very despair, a lot of despair, a lot of gloom. And in this way, I can become impatient. I can become very impatient. I can be like, you know, "God, what's going on here?" And in my disrespect and my arrogance, I can think that my plan, or how I could see it turning out, is better than what God has in store for me. You know, Joseph tried to make things happen of his own accord. And I can ask, we can feel the same sometimes. We can feel that if God may not be working as fast or in the same way we'd like to, you know, can we push the boat a little bit? You know, can we make our own path? God taught Joseph patience. God taught Joseph to wait for him. But more importantly, God also taught him faith, trust, and humility. Humility in knowing that I cannot lead my own life. I am helpless in some regards, or in most regards actually. And I need God to bail me out. I need God to provide a way. And God works outside of time, so we cannot be ushering God to come and can you sort this out quickly? We can't do that. However, I urge you, when you're in those situations, you may be in those situations now, I do not know. However, what I do urge you is to be hopeful. I urge you not to lose faith and not to lose sight of the faithful dreams God has instilled in you. Even if that may be the case that, you know, you might not even believe in God, you know, why don't you ask someone today, just show me something, a few scriptures, you know, ask someone, you know, to show God to me. Don't lose that hope. Don't think that you have to go through it all alone. Because God has great plans in store. And I would really hate it to be the case that those are missed because you are too preoccupied in driving your own mediocre values and, you know, what I would like to achieve.
The final point would be the humble would be exhorted. And let's turn to Genesis 41. Verse 37 to 46. The plan seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his officials. So Pharaoh asked them, "Can we find anyone like this man? One in whom he is the Spirit of God?" And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you." So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robe of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in a chariot as his second in command. A man shouted before him, "Make way!" Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I'm Pharaoh, but without your word, no one will lift hand or foot in all Egypt." Pharaoh gave Joseph the name Sapphanath-Panirah and gave him Asnath, daughter of Potiphar, priest of On, to be his wife. As Joseph went throughout the land of Egypt, Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from Pharaoh's presence to travel throughout Egypt. So what happened before this was Joseph was already in prison for 2 years. And Pharaoh also had a dream during that time. And that dream was extremely weird. So he was by the Nile, and there were 7 fat cows grazing. And behind them, there are 7 skinny cows, ugly cows. And at the end, the 7 skinny ones ate the 7 fat ones. And he had another dream. And this one is, there are 7 healthy heads of grain. And after the 7 healthy ones, there are 7 thin heads of grain sprouted. And the 7 thin ones ate the 7 healthy ones. And because he was troubled by this dream, he asked who can interpret this dream. And then the cupbearer remembered Joseph, and he told Pharaoh about him. So Joseph interpreted that dream. And tells Pharaoh about this dream. It's about there will be 7 years of great harvest, but there will be 7 years of famine will be followed. And let us recap what happened before. So first, his brother tried to kill him, and then he was sold into slavery. He was treated unjustly, isolated, abandoned. And now he is the most powerful man, second in command after Pharaoh. Joseph, when he was 17, he got his first dream. And now he's 30, and he see the dream had been fulfilled. And there was totally 13 years gap in total. And let's continue in chapter 42 and verse 6. It says, Now Joseph was the governor of the land, the one who sold grain to all its people. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. His brother bowed down to him. And we could see the dream of a 17-year-old boy actually being fulfilled. And when he saw that, it clicks and he remembered his dream. And we turn to Genesis 45, verse 1 to 8. It says, then Joseph could no longer control himself before all his attendants. And he cried out, have everyone leave my presence. So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and the Pharaoh's household heard about it. Joseph said to his brother, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? But his brother were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brother, come close to me. When they had done so, he said, I'm your brother, Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now, do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now, there has been famine in the land. And for the next 5 years, there will not be plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you and remnant on earth and to save lives by great deliverance. So then, it was not you who sent me here, but God. He made me father to Pharaoh, lord of his entire household, and ruler of all Egypt. So Joseph finally understood what that dream was all about. It's not about how great he is. It's not about, but it's about how God changed him and made him the man he is now. See, his character changed from prideful to humble. What would happen to the brothers if it was still the same prideful, arrogant, sneak Joseph from before? I think Joseph will make them suffer 10 times more than what he suffered. And even put him into prison, torture them, or even make them to feel stupid in front of everyone and make him how amazing he is. If I was Joseph and my siblings sold me into slavery and making me all going through all these suffering, all these trials, I'll make her pay 100 times more than what I suffered. I'll make her wash my feet, bow down to me, anything. But Joseph knows it's all God's plan. It's just nothing but a humble servant. He understands that it's not about him, but it's about God. He gets it now. He's not the big deal. It's not how amazing he is, but how amazing God is. And when his brother were apologizing to him, he told his brothers, "You meant this for harm, but God meant this for good." He's just a humble servant of God. Do you think Joseph will be willing to go through all these trials, these 13 years of suffering? Do you think it was worth it for him to save his entire family, to save the entire nation from famine? Yes, without a doubt, it was worth it. God has a great plans for you, great vision for every one of us. But the question is, are you willing to be used by God? Are you willing to surrender and submit to God's plan? Are you willing to trust God in trials and distress? During times when I want to be in control and I want to do it my way, if you believe in God, do you believe that God has a great plan for you? Do you know that God understands you more than you understand yourself? There are more than 5,000 promises in the Bible. In order for God's promises to fulfill in your life, we need to follow in God's way, in following God's command. If we don't walk His way, there's no way God's promises will be fulfilled in our lives. So for those who are not sure about God, I do encourage you to study the Bible and to find out God's plan in your life. For those who have been coming to church for quite some time, I want to ask you, when trials and worry comes, will that make you draw closer to God or make you away from God? Whether you want to do it your way or do it God's way. To end today's sermon, I would like to end with a video from Joseph, the King of Dreams. It's a song, "You Know Better Than I."
To know why.
Awesome. Well, that brings us towards the end of our service. What a great job they all did. If we can give them another round of applause, they did fantastic. Joel and Maria welcoming us this morning. Marcus leading us to the cross. Mac and Jonathan preaching the word. All the song leaders, the solos, everything. It was a fantastic service. Thank you so much for all that you did. And honestly, let's take that message to heart as well. Joseph is such an incredible character when we look at him in the Bible. The journey God took him through. And unlike many of us, God actually gave him the picture of what would happen towards the end of his life as a young boy. He did give him the vision and the dream early on. And Joseph, I doubt very much, fully understood what was going to come ahead to achieve that dream and that vision. And God was maturing his character and helping him grow, and the trials and challenges he went through were all for a reason and a purpose. And I appreciate Mac's question when we reflect and we think, Joseph, looking back on his life, if you would have asked him, was it worth it? Being sold into slavery, being wrongly accused, being imprisoned for all that time unjustly, being forgotten whilst you're in prison, would it have been worth it? Looking back, knowing you saved your entire family, the entire nation of Egypt, all the surrounding nations from this incredible famine, to being raised up to being second in command of Egypt, yes, I'm sure he would have said, with hindsight, it was worth it. But at the time, it's a very difficult thing to understand and to get a grip with. But I think that's the journey of walking by faith. And that's the journey for all of us, is learning to let go, learning to trust God really does know better than us, and to submit and to surrender to his plans. I don't think any of us want to come to the end of our life and face God, and for God to look back and say, here's what I could have done through your life. Here's the plans and dreams I had for you, but you just weren't willing to let me. You weren't humble enough to surrender. You wouldn't let go of your plans and your dreams and trust me. None of us want to get to that point. I think we all want to get to the point where it says, well done, good and faithful servant. We can truly live a life of faith, walking with God on a daily basis, and learn to see his plans and his dreams come to fruition in our life as we trust him. Let's give them all one last round of applause. A fantastic job.